It is Jen B, and I'm in for Nick DiGilio. Thank you to the lovely Patty Vasquez for the introduction. That was nice. I like hearing her. She's a good lady. I'm here, and we're going to talk about Hooray for Hollywood for the next couple hours. I did watch the Oscars, and it was interesting. And we will talk. We're gonna have some fun. We are going to talk about, of course, who won, who didn't win, the weirdness. Who seemed to be drunk, could be drunk, definitely was drunk. And we're also going to speak with a social worker about the sort of psychology of fame and why we love famous people and why we love these award shows and get so into them and to love the outfits and things like that. So, and then we're going to just talk about encounters with famous people and weird things that may have happened to you. So I want to hear from you guys too, because I know out there everyone has opinions about the award shows, and our number is 312-981-7200, and we welcome your calls and texts, and we'll have a good show. But I want to say hello to the people I'm working with. Hi, Dan Shagrew.
Good morning, Jen.
How are you?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Good. It's really good to be with you.
I know. It's nice to work together.
I know. We've never worked together in this capacity.
Exactly, yes.
I have been a guest on your show.
Yes.
And now we're working together on the same show.
Very exciting.
It's very exciting. How are you?
I'm doing good.
You watched the Oscars.
Yes, I watched it as well.
And it was, it was an event.
It was an event.
You know, it is what it is, right?
As you mentioned, it's Hooray for Hollywood. That is.
It is Hooray for Hollywood.
It is them hooraying themselves for three hours plus.
3 hours plus. How long was the show? Because I did the old DVR.
It ended at 11:10 and it started at 7:30. So 3:40.
Yeah, that's like almost a flight to Los Angeles. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, or a Hobbit movie. Yeah,
Hobbit movie.
Yes.
Oh, right. What was the other movie that just came out that Nick was talking about was so long, that was like 17 hours long? I can't remember what it was, but it definitely was like a long movie. You know, that's all right. And let's see. Hi, Susan.
Hey, good morning. How are you, Jen?
I'm good. You know, you're in your famous wear, like your incognito situation.
Wait, it's cold.
Is it cold in your little situation?
It's cold in our Chicago situation, and so I'm just like, I'm just going wintry tonight.
Yeah, for people, obviously you can't see her. She's wearing a cute baseball cap or hat, if you will, a scarf and a shirt. You look like a star. Let's say, I don't know. Well, you can move your face so you're not Nicole Kidman, but if minus that, you look like maybe Nicole Kidman at the Jewels, in line, doesn't want to be noticed. You're looking good over there.
Hey, well, I'll take that. As a female to female, the hat means bad hair day.
For me, the hat means bad hair day. And, I'm hoping at the coffee shop that the locals, because I live near a coffee shop and I go there, and sometimes I go there to write. I'm a writer and an actor, and as well as being a fill-in here. And so I'll go there and I'll wear my hat because the local town eccentrics will see me and I can't stop talking to them, and then I'll get nothing done. So it either means that I'm trying not to talk to the eccentrics or that I'm bad hair, one of the two.
Or it can mean that you don't care, and maybe a little of that, goes into my hat.
Yeah, Susan, how about this? Bad hair, don't care. That is what bad hair means. Yeah. Well, hello. It's so nice to see you again.
Oh, well, we're so glad that you're here, with Nick being gone and Oscar. When I saw the schedule or realized you'd be in, it's like my heart skipped a beat.
Oh, and yes, I feel the same way. I love being here. I think that radio is a great thing, and I think AM radio is a magical place. I know that sounds a little strange, but that's how I feel. So I'm glad. I'm glad we're all here together, and we're going to talk about the Oscars, of course, the Academy Awards. And this was the 87th, Dan, the 87th Academy Awards. So they are way older than most of us. And it got me thinking, Dan, and tell me what did they do before the Academy Awards?
Yeah, that's a good question, because
it is the Super Bowl, if you will, for film And it's a great thing. So anyway, I just wondered, because it's the 87th one, I wondered what you know, Hollywood did before this celebration. So like I said, we're gonna talk all about the Academy Awards, and we're also going to talk to a social worker about the psychology of fame. And we'll take your calls at 312-981-7200. Tell us what you think. What went on? Did you like, as Patty said, did you like Doogie Howser as our host? You know, Doogie Howser or... what's his name again? I can't even... Oh, Neil Patrick Harris. Neil Patrick Harris has hosted everything. I mean, he's hosted everything. And now he's hosted the Oscars. So what do you think about that? Are you impressed with the way he did it? Do you think someone else could have done it better? We heard earlier that Elif was talking about Ellen. I happen to love Ellen. I think that she's hilarious. We'll talk about him as a host, and we'll talk about other things, everything related to this Academy Awards. It was like Dan was saying, it was a long show, and you know, to be honest, I don't have a TV, which is, you know, I always talk about with Nick DiGilio on the air. I don't have a TV because I'd never leave the house because, you know, you can get 5 million channels, right? So you can watch anything. And I'm a true crime junkie. So I would watch 48 Hours, the first 48, Cold Case, American Justice. I love me some Bill Curtis, you know. So I don't have a TV. Therefore, I had to figure out a way to watch these. And I was like, the Oscars. So I was like, maybe I'll come to WGN. And then I thought, well, then I'd be the weirdo in the green room because I'm a fill-in. So nobody really knows who, I mean, people know who I am, but they'll be like, who is this like weirdo hanging out in the downstairs green room watching the Oscars with her popcorn and her Cheetos? Like, that's weird. So I said, okay, well, I'm not going to do that. Like, where am I going to watch these? And a friend of mine, luckily, she said, well, I'm going out. So I basically have to invite myself over to people's houses to watch. I should have just come here. So a friend of mine said, well, I'm going out, so you can't come over, but I'll DVR them and then we'll watch them. So that is, in fact, what I ended up doing. So it was lovely. And I do have to say, like, there is this thing about DVR. Susan, do you have a DVR?
I do.
So it's magical.
It is.
You can just skip. You can skip the commercials.
That's what I'm going to be doing at about 5:30 a.m.
I mean, it really can shorten the show down from 112 hours to 100 hours. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and plus the idea that you can, I mean, it's probably an antiquated term, fast forward. You can get through, you know, if there's somebody's speech you don't want to hear or a part of it that you don't need to see, you can just zoom past it too. So
exactly. I wanted to watch the whole thing, but I'm telling you, you get those commercials and it's a long thing. And they also have the other thing that they have with the Academy Awards is a three hour red carpet situation.
Oh, we were, you know what? We were just talking about that. I thought it started at either 3 or 4 PM today.
It's absurd. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, I like fashion, like the next person. But I mean, there is so much talking about the energy and the crackle in the air. And, you know, I worked in Hollywood for a long time as Nicolas Cage's assistant. And
yes,
people,
you did.
People know that about me. People know that about me. And so I can tell you that the crackle in the air is mostly people wanting to go home and stop working the Oscars and go live their life. However, it is exciting. There is a level of excitement. I think we have a caller. We're going to take a caller real quick. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, you wanted to talk, give us your 2 cents about Lady Gaga?
She looked great. Her hair looked great. You know, it may have been a wig or whatever. The dress looked great. She was fine until she raised her right arm and I saw the tattoo and I just went, oh, heck.
You're not a big you're not a tattoo fan on a Julie Andrews impersonator. Is that?
I'm 67, so I'm... I'm sure I'm out of that age zone, but it just turned me off completely.
I can hear you. I mean, I did, you know, to be honest with you, I did too notice her tattoos and think, wow, that's so not Julie Andrews. Like, I don't mind tattoos, but you're right. It kind of threw me off in terms of her whole, the whole sort of ambiance of those trees and the silhouettes. And then all of a sudden she's
and the dress and, you know, you get this nice fluffy dress on and you throw your arm out and you go, what the hell is that?
I know. Mike, I hear you. So Mike, not a huge fan of the Lady Gaga tattoo part. However, did you think she sounded good though, right?
Oh, she sounded great since she's tuned up with Tony Bennett. It's like she's trying to get off the rock train and she's going back to American standards and the American songbook.
Yeah. Well,
and she's got a great voice. She really does.
I agree. I think she did a really good job. And thanks for calling in on your Lady Gaga tip, Mike. Have a great morning.
You too. Thank you.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I hear what he's saying. Tattoos can be weird on a classically trained singer. We will be back with more Hooray for Hollywood. This is Jen B. covering for Nick DiGilio on WGN 720 AM. She sounds pretty good, I gotta say. Mike was right. She
wants to sing every song.
It's pretty nice. Oh, we have, look, we've got Joe on the line. Hey, Joe.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, Joe. Tell us about, you've got a Lady Gaga bit?
Yeah, that comment and one bonus, if you would.
Okay.
For a true aficionado of what a good voice is, Lady, she was okay, but she ran out of breath a good 5 or 6 times I counted. And then if you caught the closing, if you play that back on your VCR, you'll notice that the chorus was behind her, and she was a good half second off the final note.
I don't know if she was nervous
or whatever. But she didn't have enough breath to do probably roughly half of those songs, and then she was really off time on the end.
Oh, are you a singer? Are you a vocal coach?
Yeah. Did you ever hear the Vienna Choir Boys?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That was the beginning of my career. I sang solo with those guys at the Carnegie Music Hall in Pittsburgh.
Wow.
So I know what I'm talking about a little bit.
No, Joe, you really know what you're talking about a whole lot. So here's my question. Did she, so clearly, I mean, this is in layman's terms, she didn't have the...
She wasn't breathing from her diaphragm, number one. And, I know I've heard her on other occasions where she can sing rather nicely. And I'm getting a little older right now, so don't judge my voice by what I used to be.
No, you sound good to me. So...
Okay.
Yeah, so but her she breath was, ran out.
Yeah, she was. Her timing was off, and she just didn't have enough breath, period. It doesn't have to be any more sophisticated than that.
Can that happen when you're really nervous?
Yes. Okay. I was going to say, she might have been nervous, because that's a totally different environment for her.
Right, and there's only a billion, trillion, million people that are, like, in, sort of, totally different crowd, right?
Sure, and she's got firecrackers going off behind her, and, the drums and the big bands and, all the extra highlights, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that really got me about the whole presentation was, how we sometimes over-censor in the United States? We're kind of hypocrites compared to Europe.
Yes.
I wish Patrick would. You didn't see this, but when you play it back, you'll see that he came out in his undershorts.
Yes, I saw. Oh, I saw it. We were talking about that, and it was a reference to one of the movies. Birdman. But here's the thing about that. I found that, and I'm 39. I consider myself a kind of a hip person.
Sure.
But here's the thing. I thought it was offensive.
I'm not a prude either. But I thought it looked kind of gross. I mean, there was not even, if it would have been a brand new pair, freshly washed, and tidy whitey, if you would, it might have been less offensive. But he was just hanging out there.
Yeah,
you know,
it was
just,
kind of a loose situation. Was that your bonus thing you were talking?
That was my
quite
bonus,
a bonus
right.
There, Joe. Quite a bonus. So yeah, I hear what you're saying. It's nice to have that perspective. Thanks for calling about the Lady Gaga, and from a technical singing point of view, I did notice. You know, I gotta say, Joe, I did notice too. At the end, something seemed a little off, and she like broke into tears almost after. So I think she was probably so nervous. But you're right. I mean, if for someone that knows, they know. You knew she was off. Yeah.
And you're right. As you said, it was a different arena for her, totally different. And she might have been a little uptight,
yeah,
for sure.
Exactly. All right. Thanks for calling. Thanks
you
for calling.
You betcha, kiddo.
Okay, we've got a text coming in from Jeff, and Jeff says Lady Gaga stole the show with her tribute to the 50th anniversary to Sound of Music, and 224, Erico 224 says that they agree with Mike. Gaga was great until the tattoo part. 224 is also happy Birdman won Best Picture and wished American Sniper would have won more awards. Speaking of that, let's just do a quick rundown before I forget, of course, of who won what. And yeah, let's do that so people know if who people that were maybe working or doing whatever or chose not to watch. So Birdman was the big winner of the night at the 87th Annual Academy Awards. And It sort of, like Dan has here, and we've read that it's a genre-defying art house film, won for Best Picture. It also won for cinematography, original screenplay, and Best Director. Iñárritu won the directing Oscar. That's an Enye over the N for people that don't know that. So it's Anyway, moving on. So acting categories, Eddie Redmayne. Redmayne won for Best Actor, and Julianne Moore took home the award for Best Actress. J.K. Simmons won the first Oscar of the night for Actor in a Supporting Role, while Patricia Arquette won for Best Actress in a Supporting Role. We'll get to some clips of these people later. Dan's hooked us up with a bunch of clips, and we'll talk about that. I just wanted to give you, if you're like, Jen, you're blabbing, and yet we don't know who won anything. So the other winners were Common and John Legend, who are singers, and Common is a rapper. They won for their original song, Glory, for the film Selma. And the Polish film Ida won Best Foreign Film, and Big Hero 6 for Best Animated Feature, which makes me really, really happy. And the Grand Budapest Hotel also took home several awards, including one for costume design, makeup, hairstyling, production design, and Best Original Score. Whiplash, the conservatory nightmare, meaning I went to a conservatory, so I can kind of relate. It took home two Oscars, sound mixing and film editing, and American Sniper took home the award for sound editing. When we come back, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I believe we're going to call and have our social worker therapist on to talk about the psychology behind fame and why we love famous people and famous actors. You're listening to Jen B. I'm filling in for Nick DiGilio on WGN 720 AM. It's Jen B. And I'm filling in for Nick DiGilio, my friend, and I like to call him Dan, my radio mentor.
I can see that.
I can see that. I mean, I don't know that if he feels that way, but I do.
He would probably be like, I'm not.
Yeah. He's a humble man. But I'm grateful that he has sort of helped me and taken me under his wing. We are talking about Hooray for Hollywood stuff. It is the morning after the the 87th. Academy Awards, otherwise known as the Oscars. And I was thinking about it as we came up to the Oscar night, and I was thinking about, man, we love us some celebrities and some award shows. And I'm not judging. I notice that, like, there is such a huge portion of television advertising and stuff that goes into fame and celebrity and these award shows that we are just, I mean, there was like 3 hours of red carpet before the actual award started, and I was like, wow. And so I thought, well, it would be really good to have on a person, a therapist and also someone who has a history and a background and in the arts and is still performing. And her name is Susan Lambert, and she is a psychotherapist. She's also a voice teacher and a performer. And she's in Greece. Are you in Greece?
I am, dear. I'm sitting right here in my living room looking out on the sea, actually. I'm in the southern part of Athens, right on the water. So.
Oh, my.
It's a stormy day, but not like your stormy day.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us, you're an LCSW, which is a licensed clinical social worker.
Yep.
And so what is it? Did you watch the Oscars?
I watched some of it. It was on at 3:30 in the morning, so I watched some of it. Yep, not all of it.
Yeah,
I watched a lot of key moments.
The key moments. What stick out to you as the moments that you actually? I like to ask people, what did you enjoy about the Oscars?
I'll tell you, it's interesting. I don't even watch the Oscars every year, actually. I do. I have enjoyed the Oscars. What I like about how the Oscars work is that they have always been to some degree, but have become more and more with ease and with connection, a platform for people to perhaps connect to the wider world, to connect to what's going on in the world. I really liked Patricia Arquette, talking about ERA. I really liked I liked people mentioning and giving awareness to people about ALS. Mm-hmm. I like that people that win are, it's lovely that we always, well, not always, but a lot of the time we hear people acknowledging their competitors and acknowledging the support and the collaboration people they work with. Mm-hmm. But what I really like the most is when people are also going outside of the box and really thinking about the social problems in the world, how this industry can be helpful, because it's a powerful industry.
Yeah.
We don't have to resent it. It's powerful. It's just the truth. In our culture and in America, the entertainment industry is very powerful. And it's been, we've often heard people describe movie stars as the monarchy.
Interesting. Say more about that. I like that idea in terms of...
It's kind of... Yeah, I mean, in an American way, because obviously our government is its own thing, and that could be a whole other day of a show that we could talk about.
Yeah, that's a whole other Oprah.
That's a whole other thing. But we've heard people talk about the movie industry and movie stars being sort of like the monarchy. They're beautiful. They have this pageantry with the Oscars, and there's all that wind up for it, and the Golden Globes, and all of that. And, of course, there are all the negative aspects, and that's actually not what I want to talk about today, because I think everyone's on top of that. I think everyone's got it.
Yeah.
They've got the...
Right. Everyone's pretty clear on what could be better. You know what I mean?
Everyone's clear about,
what's
not
wrong.
Necessarily authentic about the Oscars, that it's political, that it's this, that it's that, that movie stars, that, people maybe aren't in touch with reality when they get too obsessed with movie stars. But I really feel like, okay, we've got that. But to me, the underlining thing is, first of all, television is huge in every culture. In every culture. There's even an American Idol in Afghanistan.
Really?
Yes, and I'm forgetting the name of it now. It has star in the title, but there is an Afghanistan version of American Idol. So this is around the world, this effect of television, and we are certainly overexposed.
Mm-hmm.
We're overexposed to celebrities and their lives, talk shows, Twitter, the internet, Facebook,
television. Yeah, social media, right.
But the thing is, the fact is, it is a powerful industry in America, and I like seeing in this generation, and as the years have gone by in the last 10, 15, 20 years, I like seeing these powerful actors and people in this industry taking more responsibility to use that power for good.
Oh.
And to use it to speak to each other, to their community, and to the millions of viewers who are watching the show.
Interesting. So I like it. I like that you're talking about it in a positive way, you know, because I do feel like, don't you feel like there's so many things we can bash or sort of make fun of or be sarcastic about, but I like the fact that you're coming from a place of sort of positivity about what can be and the possibilities. So what's your thought on why do we love like shows like this? What is it in us that really wants to, I don't know, engage in this kind of ritual to watch these things?
I think there are a lot of things, and I really, obviously, whatever I say, we always say there are exceptions to any generalizations, but I feel that, you know, and again, we always have to understand, and every actor in that room and every director in that room knows it's a marketing tool. The Oscars is about marketing.
Say more about that.
Well, I mean, it's marketing. It's advertising. Obviously, you win an Oscar, you know, you're gonna bump up on a list of getting more jobs, or your film is going to get more box office. But, you know, that's okay. Because that's what we need to do in this world. That's the way the world is. This is advertising for me. I'm talking on your show. This is marketing for me.
And we're glad you are.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's an okay aspect of it. What we want to be interested in is, what is there substance behind that marketing? Is, you know, what's being marketed, and is there something to it besides just, you know, hard cash, you know, pitching in everybody's eyes and vision? And I feel that there is, and you know, it could be that my view is naive, but I don't think so, because I think that, you know, I think that what we love about the Oscars, for example, first of all, obviously the glitz and the hype and all that, like I said, that everybody else is already on. We're about the dresses, we're about all of that because of television, because America's very materialistic, because we're a rich country. We follow the hairstyles. That's just sort of the way we are as kids, as teenagers. You know, Americans are like happy teenagers planning for a prom when we're thinking about the Oscars, you know? So there's that aspect. But what I also feel about it is, you know, we watch this thing. We watch these powerful people who make a lot of money and who sort of run the country in a certain way. And they gather together in a real community. They're in a community, and we get to be part of that. We look in on a very vibrant, expressive community of people, whether it's movie crew to movie crew to actresses who have been competing against each other for the last 30 years.
Right.
It's community. And of course, in communities, some people don't get along with each other.
Right.
It's that whole range of dynamics that we have with each other. However, it's community, and we like that. We need it, and we like it.
That's so interesting to hear. I mean, I'm really appreciating your perspective. And someone, a texter texted in from area code 773 saying that they agree with you that people sometimes don't realize that these very fortunate actors who are very rich will often do a lot of charity work. So there is like a sort of, like you said, using their power for good kind of a thing. And I think one of those things is building community. And you're shedding light on giving me a perspective that I never would have thought about that, the idea of community. Talk more about the community idea within that.
Well,
world.
I mean, you know, for example, a couple of good examples are, one is George Clooney. Okay, he's a big phenomenon. You know, he started on ER on TV, and we all loved him as Doug and all of that stuff. And, you know, he became a big, huge movie star. And, you know, we were all kind of loving to hate him. All women were loving him because he was gorgeous, and everyone was hating him because he didn't settle down. Or I don't know. We had all
the eternal bachelor, and nobody likes that.
Yeah, exactly. We had all of those kinds of, you know, opinions about him. And then we noticed that, you know, he became quite powerful. Actually, and I mean, I don't know him, obviously, and obviously he's got his limitations and his quote unquote issues, like every single one of us, including me. And you know, and the brain is imperfect,
right?
And you know, and we have our experiences. So, but what we see, for example, with him, in that community is that he was one of the people who started to be more vocal about, hey, I can do a lot with this. I can do a lot with this around the world. And I don't even have to really be shedding tons and tons of publicity on it. Obviously, he does publicize what he does, but...
But not really in a garish way. It's not gratuitous. Like he, you hear about the things that he does, and you, for me, I can tell it's not a publicity stunt. Like he really cares, and I've seen other people do that too. But so, yeah, go on about that.
So he's a good example of that. I think that there are many other, you know, like you brought up. We're not talking about a community of people who are, in fact, in terms of comparing them to monarchy, you know, they're not amassing necessarily wealth to put it in one place and keep sort of circulating it around and around in the same bunch of 20 or 30 or 40 people. Mm-hmm. These are people who certainly are doing whatever they're doing with their money, but they're also using their popularity and their visibility for a lot of good in the world, or they're just doing what they do, like the rest of us do.
It's a job to some of them, and then they go home, and you don't hear about it, and they don't. Mm-hmm. But I definitely, I mean, it's just so interesting, and that I think in the tabloids, right? People love to sort of bash celebrities, right? And say, oh, they're this, they're that. And I think it's interesting to think about it. Like, these are people, they're very fortunate people, they're imperfect people, but there are many of them that are doing really great things in the world. It reminds me of Emma Watson is also, one of those people that is talking in front of panels and conferences and congresses and talking about women's rights. And I want to talk more about that. Can you stick with us? We're going to take a break.
Great,
because I'm really enjoying hearing what you have to say. I think it's very, very refreshing. So we're going to continue our talk with Susan Lambert. This is Jen B. I'm filling in for Nick DiGilio on WGN 720 AM. Good morning, everybody. It is Jen B. I'm filling in for Nick DiGilio here at WGN. I'm happy to be here. And last night, was the 87th Academy Awards. And I'm talking with social worker and performer and woman of many talents, Susan Lambert. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
So we're talking about the Oscars, and we're also talking about celebrities in general and people who sort of have their name in the public eye. And you've really brought my attention to something that I don't think we talk about, which is the positive aspects of celebrity fame and sort of a community of people that are well known doing good things in the world. And you were talking about, we had talked about George Clooney. Is there anyone else you wanted to mention in that?
Well, you know, I'm the most interested maybe in sharing today, if it's because I think maybe it is a little bit of a different take, besides the fact that, of course, you know, what we hope is that when people in communities gain some power, we would like to feel that they don't abuse that power. And in every system and in every community that becomes larger than, like that becomes a macro community, there are going to be people who abuse power. And certainly there are people in the entertainment industry that do. But what we hope is that we can have a certain amount of faith that people in positions of power are not going to abuse that. Mm-hmm. That's our hope and faith. That's why we have governments. That's why we vote. You know, even when we become disillusioned, that's why we would still like to hope that leaders in our societies, that we can have faith in them. They're not going to abuse their power. And so in a weird way, you know, people in our country anyway, because we won't speak about other countries in the entertainment industry, do have power. And a lot of that is because of television. But a lot of it is just because, you know, it's a big industry in our country. And I feel that the thing is that we want to connect. We want to connect with these people because you know why?
Why?
We go to the movies and we love the movies. And I believe that we love the movies because the movies are about life, because the movies magnify so many things that all of us are going through and so many things that we would like to know about or that we would like to feel that we are not able to in our own lives. Mm. And in my view, there's nothing wrong or pathological, or like we could analyze it and say, oh, people don't know their own reality.
There's right.
Like, you know, but, you know, I'm personally choosing not to look at it from that point of view. Art, we need art. Art balances us. You know, art is good for us. It's what I would call going to the movies, for example, from a clinical point of view,
yeah.
to get that way, is what I would call an adaptive coping skill.
Hmm. What does that mean? Tell me more about that.
Well, what that means, you know, it's like we spend a lot of our time as human beings doing a lot of things to escape or deny our feelings. We drink too much, we mm-hmm. do drugs, we smoke cigarettes, we do blah, blah, there's a whole list, right? Because feelings are hard to manage. Movies, however, give us a chance to go somewhere and witness and be part of and have close to us people who are showing us ranges of feelings that maybe we have an inkling we have inside us, or maybe we don't have it inside us, but we imagine it. Maybe we want to learn about it. Maybe we want to connect to it. Maybe we want to feel something. Maybe we want to know more about, maybe we didn't have any idea how someone with ALS feels or the person who marries them feels. But once we see that movie, we've got an idea of it. And we have an idea of it because these people, these actors, worked really hard to go inward and to learn and to access their own feelings to make that large enough to connect to us.
That's beautiful.
Give us that gift. It's a gift.
I'm looking at this. I mean, really, I've changed the way I mean, it makes me feel, because I to be honest, like I can be, because I worked in Hollywood for so long and I still act and still write and stuff like that.
Yep.
I can become very jaded about Hollywood, and you are really restoring my sort of optimism and fun. It sounds like when you describe how you just described going to the movies, I'm like, I want to go to the movies right now because feels great.
You know, I sometimes literally prescribe certain movies for clients of mine to go and see. I really do. And, you know, yesterday I was just Skyping with a client because when I'm in Greece, I Skype with everybody from New York. I mean, I Skype with a lot of people around the world, but New York. And, you know, somebody that I'm seeing is in a big breakup. And she used as an example, she said, do you remember on Friends when Richard said, and I said, yep, I do remember that. Yep. And that's a whole example. You know, we grew up with everybody on Friends.
Right.
You know, and these are actors. But the thing is, yes, maybe there are some people that, you know, have blurred reality. But,
right.
you know, I don't think that's the average person. I think the average person, we feel we're close to celebrities.
Right.
And you know what? We are.
It's amazing. And I want to talk more. Can you stick with us on the line? I would love to talk more. We are talking
Absolutely.
With Susan Lambert. We're talking about the Academy Awards, but we're also talking about other stuff, about feelings and about why it's important. Movies are important and stuff like that. And we will be right back. This is Jen B. I'm filling in for Nick DiGilio on WGN 720 AM. This is Jen B. I'm in for Nick DiGilio, the great Nick DiGilio, who will be here tomorrow morning, and he'll have his own Oscar to do. He is the king of the movies. I am, however, the queen of talking to Susan Lambert. Hi, Susan Lambert.
Hi.
I'm so fascinated by your point of view, and I want to ask you.
Yeah.
How? So you are a performer still? Are you still?
Yeah, I never did film work. I was a live stage performer and a singer, and then. When I felt that the business, not the craft and not the art, not the community of actors and singers, but the business itself was a little rugged on my nerves and my personality and my lifestyle.
I get it. Yeah.
I decided, hey, why don't I make a little bit of a switch to go into a field with more momentum, that has more measurable momentum. But this is an interesting question that you're asking me, because it still relates back to what we're talking about, which is that I thought about going into the field of psychotherapy because, you know what? It's not that different from being an actor. It's not that different from the process. It of course, it's different and it manifests itself differently. And the purpose is much more focused and specific. It's obviously the purpose of it is quite different. However, I don't know if you know this, but many people from the acting world and the performance world go into this field, actually.
Well, and it's fascinating because I started out, I went to, speaking of Whiplash, I went to a theater conservatory, and then I worked for Nicolas Cage, and during that job, I said, you know what, I'm providing a lot of free, seriously, this was my thought, I thought, I am providing a lot of free psychotherapy here in this office for not just him, I'm not talking about him, I'm talking about everyone who walked through the door, my coworkers, it happened naturally, and I thought, well, why don't I study this? And so then I'm a licensed professional counselor also, and I...
Oh my goodness.
It's interesting to... Yeah, I worked a lot with substance abuse, but it's interesting to hear you say that. So anyway, so why don't you talk about how they're similar? Like what the...
Well, I mean, the processes are just very similar. I mean, so for me, for example, when I was... I mean, I started performing very young, and when I was 11 or 12 or 13 or something like that, I remember standing out on the stage at the school that I went to in Boston, Massachusetts, and it was Three Penny Opera, and I remember, really, honestly, I remember feeling and writing in my, I don't know, my English class journal, that my real passion and the thing I really wanted to do this for was because I wanted to connect to people in the audience. I wanted them to feel what she felt. I wanted them to have that experience. That really was why I went into it. It sounds super corny, but
no, it sounds like truth. It sounds like what you were speaking to about community. Like you want to connect with people and create sort of a community. So that was
And so the thing is that, you know, now, for example, the performing that I do, I mean, I'm not ambitious at this point. I'm not in the business. I don't care. I do it because I love it. Mm-hmm. For the last several years, I've done my own performance series of intimate concerts. And actually, in the last couple of years, I do them in-house.
So concerts.
Literally salon concerts in because I had a huge living room in Astoria, New York. And I actually happen to have a huge one now in Greece, too. So we're doing it here as well. So that the idea is to really be up close, to really connect and give people some kind of gift of a journey that you go through in your performance. And in this setting, it's up close, and people also kick their shoes off. They bring their own wine. It doesn't cost $1 million. They meet people. They make friends. And they're 3 feet away from you, and they're really getting it, and they're having an experience, which you can also have sitting in a dark movie theater with a big, huge screen with people you'll never meet and you'll never shake their hand. But it's the same kind of close connecting experience, because what you're doing is you're up close to somebody who's going inside and under the skin of their own processes, of their own background, of whatever they're drawing on in their own lives to create that character or that experience. And you're learning and going through that whole journey and range of feelings that the characters go through. And so it's connecting and it's close. And it's a similar thing in therapeutic settings. It's different purpose. And it's more focused, obviously, and it's not performance oriented, but it's the same kind of going inward and connecting and listening and sharing the notion that we want to have our feelings. We want our feelings. It's just sometimes hard to have them.
Yeah. I mean, I think it can be very challenging. And I think what you said about art is really important, that art gives us a way to connect with our feelings in a safe way. I mean, it does, you know, at the risk of sounding corny, it's like if we don't acknowledge, to me, if we don't acknowledge our feelings, whatever they may be, anger, whatever it is, the whole range, I'm not just talking about like, we love everybody. I mean, that's fine too, but they're a full range. Then we get into trouble. We get into having violence, and we get into... So it's... Yeah. I'm telling you, this conversation is making me see these Academy Awards in a different way, because I sort of get jaded about like, oh, it's just about, you know, for real, like it's just about skinny women and Angelina Jolie's collarbones. But really, if you look at it, it's like we're all trying to sort of connect and have fun too. Like these can be fun for people. Like
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a playground, and it's you know, the world is a playground, and you know, that's very Buddhist in a sense, you know, because Buddhists are saying, hey, you know what, we're all the same, we're all suffering, we all want to suffer less, and we all want to be happy, and they're saying, so don't worry about it,
because we're all in the same kind of
tough.
Boat. Yeah.
Yeah, life is tough, and we're all doing our best, and we can even, you know, so, yeah, so that's a good, when you're saying have fun as well, of course.
Yeah, like, let's and, have some fun in this in, mm-hmm. this, in this thing, because mm-hmm. I think that we do spend mm-hmm. a lot of time sort of, at least, you know, I'll speak for myself and people I know, like, judging and comparing, but it's like, yeah. can we just get lost and, you know, can we get lost and can we also just, like, enjoy ourselves and have a little levity and a little, I think it's just, like you said, a play, a fun, a dress up. You know, I think that's like it, you know, because, like, the women at the, and the men, but you really see it to me in the women's outfits. Mm-hmm. It is like playing dress up. You know what I mean? It's like dressing up and going to the ball and stuff like that. And I think that I can tend to get, and other people too can probably get, tend to get jaded about that, about like, oh, it's just thin women. It's a, but maybe, you know, maybe it's not. Maybe it's a chance for everyone to lighten up a little bit and sort of go to the ball.
Absolutely. And maybe it's both. I mean, maybe for us, for example, so I will go a little bit to that other side, to the dark side of talking about the Oscars.
Yeah,
you know, maybe it's a little bit of both. Like for us, you know, maybe we are sometimes catty about like, how can so-and-so, how can she wear that? That's so horrible.
Like, wow,
that was a disaster. Or, you know, or how come she always has that? I'll never have a $10,000 dress. Or I don't know if we think that way. For sure, that can happen. But, you know, that's also part of life. We're not always good. We're not always, sometimes we're catty, and sometimes we are competitive, and sometimes we're jealous. And I think that that's also just part of being human. And this is what this is the reason I'm talking about the Oscars kind of from sort of a more holistic point of view. You kind of get the whole shebang with the Oscars, really. You get sort of every slice of life. You know, from how we watch it, how people write about it, how people behave when they're there, you know, the wind up, what happens, what they say in their speech. Like, I read a clip this morning on the internet saying that the guy who won for Best Actor, that his speech was kind of dry and not emotional enough or something. And then I watched it and I said, what are they talking about?
Yeah.
Perfectly fine. And he was acknowledging people that have this horrible disease. What else is he supposed to say? He said what he said. He did his best.
Right.
And everyone's doing their best. All of us are doing our best.
I agree. For them. Yeah.
That's just the way it is. And sometimes we may feel like we don't like someone's best, quote unquote. But that's okay, because we're all doing our best. Like another, since you mentioned Angelina Jolie, for example, Jennifer Aniston's a good example of a celebrity that we've been very close to Jennifer Aniston. First of all, we've got to know her and loved her for years as Rachel in Friends and got very attached to her in that way. We know the pain and anguish she went through from that very public breakup. Mm-hmm. We know all the stuff about her and Angelina Jolie and all of that. We know about her life because this is the media.
Right,
the media,
it's very public.
I mean, that's a whole other thing. The media.
That's another Oprah.
Yeah. You know, the media changes our lives in a big way and how we view celebrities. Then we saw her make a shift to feature films and saw her doing kind of like plain girl stuff.
Right.
Like not gorgeous girl with perfect breasts and like, you know, not the girl in the cute dresses and running around going, oh, and having boyfriends.
Right.
And, you know, I think and whatever we feel about Angelina Jolie, we've seen her and what the journey she's gone through. And at the end of the day, the fact is, we know Jennifer Aniston more than we think we do.
Right.
We do know her.
Right.
We know some pain that she's had. We know some great success that she's had. And we know that she has the capacity and the interest to explore her range as an actor and her range of feelings. And is she able to get on a screen and actually try to embody someone with chronic pain and depression? And
you're speaking of Cake, right? The movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I haven't seen it, but everyone says that she really does, you know, that she does a great job of embodying someone that is having a sort of suicide ideation and is in trouble, is in real trouble.
Yep.
So would you agree she does a good job in that? I mean,
I do. And again, you know, my feeling is, and definitely believe me, if we were sitting and having coffee, you know, I could give you lots of my opinions about who I think are great actors and who aren't and which movies are my favorites. My purpose in talking to you right now isn't that, however. So my thing, though, is that, for example, if I, of course, if I go to a movie and I feel like somebody's phoning it in and they're not, you know, they have no talent, okay, that's too bad. However, I feel like the fact of the matter is when we go there to the movies, we're watching somebody, again, doing their best to show us a slice of somebody's life and a slice of an experience and a journey. And it doesn't even have to be good for us to learn from it or to have a feeling or a response. And what's real, what this brings up for me that's very interesting is I had a colleague years ago, another therapist, and I forget what we were really talking about, but she said to me once, she said, you know what? Really, to have good therapy and to get better, you don't even really have to have a good therapist. You just have to have someone who's sitting there and listening to you. Mm. It doesn't even have to be a good therapist. And I remember thinking, what are you, crazy? You know, and yeah. But I got her point. I mean, of course, you'd like to have a good therapist, and, you know, you want somebody who knows what they're doing and who's able to make connections for you and who's empathic and who can get to know you in a through-and-through way so that they can help you facilitate your own wellness and your own healing, if that's what you're there for, and that will really be there for you. But her point was, perfection isn't the idea. Being amazing isn't the idea. It's showing up.
Mm.
Show up and do your best to connect.
Right.
And this is what I feel about our relationship with celebrities. I think, yes, it can go over the top. I think, yes, some people can become really obsessed, and I think that, you know, maybe there are some copycat dangers or little girls starving themselves because they
right.
want skinny like Rachel on Friends, for
right.
sure. But, you know, I've worked, for example, with a lot of women with eating disorders, and, you know, they never saw Friends or they don't have TV.
Right, so I think it's not, we can't necessarily blame it. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Susan, there is someone with a text, a question for you, and I, from the area code 773, and we're going to talk
great.
About that. Right now, we're going to take a little break. This is Jen B., on WGN 720 AM. Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. This is Jen B. I'm in for Nick DiGilio. And we are talking Oscars, we're talking Hollywood, but we're talking so much more than that. And Susan, I have some questions for you and some things.
Okay.
So someone from the 847 area code says that they thought it was interesting that one of the presenters quoted Robin Williams about how all actors have a bit of madness and they have to try to capture that. What is your take on that? Because I know a lot of people think, oh, you know, actors and artists really have a bit of madness. What's your take on that?
Yeah, what a wonderful question. So thank you, whoever that is who brought that up. That's a really a wonderful quote. I missed that quote, I have to say, so I'm going to have to go back and find it. We can't know, obviously, exactly what Robin Williams meant by madness, quote-unquote, but the way that I would interpret that is that, you know, when we're digging deep, particularly for film, because it's that very larger than life, but also for live theater, when we're digging deep, I believe, as actors, to present characters and journeys and situations and feelings for larger audiences and for collective groups of people, we're having to try to expand to our limits of the range of feelings that we're able to access within ourselves. And so I imagine maybe what he means, I mean, Robin Williams was extremely brilliant at going to his limits and extremely brilliant in a lot of levels. I'm imagining, or at least in my mind, that kind of madness is the willingness to risk going into the unknown of where we might go with our feelings. To trust, this is where the craft would come in. This is why we study craft and technique in a way, to kind of know what the structure is, but then maybe the brilliance and maybe the madness is let ourselves go within that, to go to the limits of our experience, our imagination, what we feel. There might be darkness in us that we didn't know about,
right,
that we may find because we're playing a character with a deadly disease. There might be a joyfulness in us that's almost manic and that's crazy that we may find. You know, think about movies like The Eternal. Oh God!
Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Yeah,
yeah. You know, a good example of, you know, the extremes of human, you know, human.
Yeah, like a beautiful mind type of
a beautiful mind. So we've gotta be able to find the limits and really push ourselves to the very end of our limits and sometimes past our limits, and maybe we'll be okay.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that's what he's talking about.
Okay. And then the other one from area code 773, which is really interesting. You touched on this right before we went to break, which is 773 says, my daughter and I love the movies. It's a great way to expose her to different ideas and the world. But I worry that she sees all of these skinny women and their sexualization. Any advice on how to separate the two?
How to separate the good of it and this downside?
Exactly. How do you talk to kids or young women about?
Yes, you get me. Yeah. Well, and that's of course that's really sort of maybe the profound question about exposure in terms of our young people and how we're raising our children and how we're growing in this world, because there's so much access now.
Mm-hmm.
This would be the problem also with Facebook, with Twitter, with the internet, with television, with film, with media, with print, all of it. Also, of course, it brings up the bigger issue of women and how we see ourselves in society. And yes, we've come a long way, and I'm very happy for that, but we're still suffering a certain kind of pressure to have a sense of image that may not be either healthy or really relevant to who we are as human beings. I think that first of all, I don't know how old this woman's daughter is, but obviously we choose, if we're going to the movies with our children, we're obviously choosing age appropriate.
Right, that's
films
the first
to go
thing,
to,
right?
For whatever reason. And I would have to say that I lean towards I am much more disturbed by our young people witnessing violence than I am sexual content, to tell you the truth. However, the sexualization of women, she's absolutely right, is of course a concern. But I think violence and skinny women and sexualization, all these kinds of really controversial and really extremes of experience, if we're talking about bringing young people to the movies, we want to use our own judgment. She knows her daughter better than anybody does. What are her daughter's vulnerabilities? What is she talking about with her daughter? What is she exposing her daughter to in their regular life in terms of good role models, in terms of good rituals, self-care, learning about self-care, learning about self-respect? You know, what women in their lives do they know who have good self-respect and dignity and integrity, so that we can kind of make a recipe of, we're going to learn new things and we're going to see larger than life experiences and feelings and characters on the screen. And then we have our own life where we also balance out that experience with our experience.
That's super interesting, because I just feel like something that just hit me, it's like, can we, like you're saying, can we watch the things on the big screen and say, okay, that is a character, or that is an actress and she looks a certain way and that's fine, but this is me, this is who I am, and that's fine too. Like like you were saying,
I think that's challenging.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's challenging, and I think that would be, and it's good she asked this question, I think that would be one of the challenges of media in general, not just movies. And in fact, TV more than movies is problematic in this way. The internet is really problematic in this way. But I would say that is the challenge. And And I think that it's not necessarily that it's so easy to be the I'm okay, you're okay, but I think that, well, one of the things about the film industry, which also comes out in the Oscars programs, for example, like Patricia Arquette mm-hmm. coming out about equal pay for women, I think that, remember when Kate Winslet a few years ago gave a big interview about her body?
Yes.
Kate Winslet gave the big interview about saying, yeah, I'm not going to be 98 pounds. I like my body.
Right.
My body's fine. And she's a big movie star and won a couple of Oscars. And so I think that, first of all, people in the movie industry, again, are being much more open about
right.
saying, hey, I'm normal. Like Brie
right.
Osmond coming out and saying, man, I had postpartum depression.
Right.
It's not pretty.
So it's
not
yeah.
a joke. It's serious. And so that's a thing that's helped, at least, bring some kind of, I think, reality to the thing about the movie thing. The thing about women needing to be skinny and the thing about women being sexualized, sadly, this is a problem in our world.
Yes.
It does get magnified in film, and it is a concern, but it's a concern in the world.
Yeah. I think that raises sort of a bigger question that we don't really have time for tonight.
Right.
But I want to just, mm-hmm. while wrapping up, I want to say thank you for talking about the film industry and the Oscars and the Academy Awards in a way that was really positive and that wasn't.
Oh, you're welcome.
I also want to know, where can people find information about you or where you're at or stuff like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, people can find information from me. My website, actually, I'll share this with your okay. millions of viewers, had a very terrible sort of plug-in disaster this week.
Oh.
So my website is going to be fixed and back up in about 2 days. But
great.
I do have a website, Susan-Lambert.com.
Okay.
I also have a Facebook page, which is Susan Lambert, LCSW psychotherapist, which has wonderful resources and readings and videos, especially also for this last caller. A lot of great things for young women to read, a lot of good resources. You can find me also on psychologytoday.com.
Okay, let's look back up. Just give me your website, your Facebook page again.
It's Susan Lambert, LCSW, psychotherapist.
Okay, and then tell me again about your Psychology Today. They can just find you by...
Yeah, that's Psychology Today is a wonderful magazine, and psychologytoday.com is the online version of it, and they have a fantastic therapist directory, and I'm in that directory, and there's a lot of information about me there as well, and the website as well. And if you Google me, you'll see me.
Yay.
If you Google my name, you'll see me right up there. And I'm in New York a good deal of the time. I'm in Athens. I'm traveling a lot, doing groups and speaking. And I see a big part of my practice is working with people on Skype so that people have access to this work.
Amazing.
No matter where they are in the world and what their situation. And it's very successful, and people feel good about it.
Amazing. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. You shed a lot of light in a different way about this awards ceremony, and I really appreciate it. Everybody,
thank you so much.
Yeah,
thanks.
Have a great rest of your day there.
You
and,
too.
And thank you.
Be well, and
all
you're
right.
welcome.
Thank you.
Okay.
Be well. Bye-bye.
Bye, love.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that was Susan Lambert, who I think was very, Dan, that was pretty.
Yeah, that's an interesting take on things.
We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to have some clips that Dan put together for us, and we're going to talk all things winners, what went down at the Oscars. This is Jen B. I'm filling in for Nick DiGilio on WGN 720 AM.